I do.
I guess.
I've been there. I've been there, yeah.
What is this?
No, we want this one.
Okay.
Let the record show that the House Transportation meeting was convened at about 2 minutes after two, or after one, sorry. And today we have the privilege of meeting jointly with the Senate Transportation Committee. And Senator Kukesh, would you like to introduce your members?
Yes, thank you very much. And I'm really pleased to be here today to have a joint meeting with this House Transportation Committee. We think this is a great opportunity for us to get an overview, and we appreciate the transportation community being here to meet with us today. We do have with us Senator Davis from the Transportation Committee, Senator Pascvan, Senator Meyer, Senator Menard, and myself, Senator Kukesh. Thank you very much.
Hey.
And just for the record, since we're in a House Transportation Committee room, we're going to have the representative from Wrangell chair the meeting today.
Thank you very much, Senator. And also, I would like to introduce our House members that are on the House Transportation Committee. We have, making sure everybody's here. Representative Johnson, Representative Johansson. Okay, he's on his way. All right. Representative Johansson, Representative Munoz, and Representative Gruenberg. And we have two new members on our committee, so I kind of wanted to introduce them separately. We have Representative Peterson and Representative T. Wilson. So we're going to have two Wilsons in the same committee, so that's going to be interesting.
Can we call you P and T?
No.
You're so funny.
So anyway, thank you everyone for coming today. What a great a turnout. That is wonderful. And before we get going too far, though, I'd like to recognize some of our staff today. And we have Nancy Hemingway, who is in the house, our house records recording secretary, and Sammy, who is our LIO monitor. And of course, my committee aide over here to my left is Becky Rooney. I wouldn't be able to do any of this without her. So anyway, we really appreciate you. Oh, yes, and we, I've already said Nancy.
Oh,
yep. The committee, there's two Nancys, so our committee, the Senate Committee 8 is Nancy Barnes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, before we start, please, I want to remind you all to turn off your cell phones. They do call, and turn them all the way off, not just to vibrate, because they do give a little hum in our microphones, and that helps a lot for the people that are online listening. And at the beginning of the session last year, we asked the department to give us an update of everything that was going on and to present their challenges and their plans for 2009. And we've invited them back today to present us an update of what's going on and what they hope to accomplish in 2010. So there's some major projects that are going on, and the department will be drilling down into the key areas that they want to deliberate on and about different bills that will become before our committee. So, the governor has signed an administrative order in 2008 to create the Community Transportation Task Force. So we're going to hear from two different areas today. And the task force will present their findings and recommendations that they're going to be giving to the governor. So Frank, would you please introduce yourself and your members that you're going, if there's anybody else that is going to be speaking, and if you would like any of them that are just here to observe also, in case you need their answers for any of our questions.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson. For the record, my name is Frank Richards, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I do appreciate you inviting us back to give you an update of what we accomplished in 2009 and what we hope to do in 2010 and beyond. But before I get started, I would like to introduce the staff of DOT that is here. First of all, my counterpart, Jim Beadle, who is the Deputy Commissioner for the Marine Highway System. Jim's in the back. We have Mary Siroki, who is our legislative liaison. Mary is an invaluable asset to all of us in presentations with the governor.
There's some new ones here, so if you would please stand when he calls your name so that the new ones can kind of get to know you. Thank you, Mary.
If you don't know Mary, you should know Mary. You will be able to do all things transportation for the committee. We also have Jeff Otteson, our Director of Program Development. Jeff is, again, oversees our federal highway program and the has also worked on that task force that we'll be hearing about. Secondly, we all have Roger Healy, our Chief Engineer, who's the head of our Design and Engineering Standards. And we have Eric Taylor, who's one of our transportation planners that is also working with the transit groups. We also have in attendance with us members from the CABATA, Executive Director Andrew Nemec, and then the Chair of the CABATA Board, Mike Foster. So I think that they are making the rounds and talking to legislators and giving the update on that project. So they've graced us with the brief time that they'll be in the audience to hear my presentation. And before I jump into the presentation, I believe you have in front of you some little reflectors and maybe some photos that were provided today. These are reflectors that are designate the Safe Routes to School program. We have given out over 50,000 of these reflectors across the state. They are a great hit in our rural communities because there are no streetlights. And so as kids are going to school, they now have a reflector that they can put on their coats and their backpacks and actually be seen by snowmobiles, vehicles, or ATVs. So even if one life is saved from being hit, the cost of these reflectors have more than paid for themselves. So we give those to you to share with your constituents, and if you'd like any more, by all means, let us know.
Madam Chair, do you have them in smaller sizes?
Representative Grunberg, if you would just go through the chair each time we
Madam
speak,
Chair.
That'll help. Yes.
Thank you. Do you have these in smaller sizes?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I do not believe that we do.
Okay, because we're pet fans, and these would be helpful for little things, too.
Scissors work well.
That would be going to doggy school. Madam Chairman, I have a fairly lengthy presentation. I will go through it and hopefully be able to provide you with a good oversight of, again, what DOT has accomplished.
Now, would you like to answer the questions as we go along or wait till the end?
I'm open either way. Your decision, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, then, I think it's just easier if we have the questions as we go along, then, if that's all right with you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Proceed.
So today I'd like to give you a progress on what we have done with the American Recovery Act, better known as the stimulus funds that we had for transportation, and also give you a quick update on the Jobs for Main Street. That's the jobs bill that Congress has been talking about most recently. Give you a background on an information that was presented by the Reason Foundation that called the Alaska Highway the worst in the nation, and we'd like to give you our take on that report. Talk a little bit about the governor's initiative.
And if you, I think there's some of them that some of our members that are. It's in your packet, and it's looks like this. So if you can find that, then we'll continue. That way we can take notes if we want to.
Very good.
Sorry.
Chair. And then talk a little bit about the accomplishments that we have had in 2009 addressing such things as emergency response from flooding and ice. And then also talk a little bit about the successes that we've had as a department. So again, the ARRA update. We had over $264 million that was granted to Alaska under that act, $178 million for highway transportation, $73 million for aviation, and about $9 million for transport. The goal, if you remember, was to get work out on the street as quickly as possible. We had to obligate the money, all of the money, by the end of February of 2010. We have now obligated approximately 75% of our funds, and we have about five projects left to go. We as a state have done very well in the expenditure of those funds also. We're in the middle half of the states, but with our shortened construction season, with our shortened delivery time, we've been able to expend about 25% of those project funds in the first year, which puts us up into the top half of the states nationwide. So we've done very well. And one thing I would like to note to the committee is that we've just created and launched a new website. This website identifies the economic stimulus projects. It provides project-specific details. It provides great background in terms of what we're doing and reporting to both Congress, to the administration, and the requirements of the bill. And it's really a precursor to project delivery and project information that we would like to be able to do for all of our projects, so that constituents will be able to see what projects the legislature has appropriated or granted us authority for, and how we are moving forward with those projects. So go to that website if you have any interest. It's highly informative. First of all, just give a quick update on our projects. Gustavus was our first project out of the chute. It was the first project under construction, and we have done successfully in Gustavus. As you can see from the pictures, the bridge and trestle work has moved farther down the road. It's providing us with a work pad that will allow roll-on, roll-off freight transport coming into that community. So the community of Gustavus now has a facility that is replacing a 1960s vintage bridge and dock facility that was dilapidated and functionally obsolete. So this money came at the right time for us to be able to advance that project, and we are advancing that down the road. It will be completed by the end of this summer open for operation. The Glen Highway paving, this was, for those members that are from the Anchorage or the Mat-Su, this has been a great boon because it's taking care of some severe ruts that we've had on the Glen Highway and the commuters coming in from Mat-Su. We did a lot of the work in record pace. The work started on June 12th and was completed by October 31st. That includes milling off the existing surface, putting down new asphalt, putting in new markings, and replacing guardrail where there were deficiencies. So that was a great activity for us to get out and underway, and for folks to have jobs that were created by that. That's the first of the three segments that we're going to be doing on the Glen Highway. This was from Highland to Eklutna. We'll have a project going from Airport Heights to Highland, and then from Eklutna out to the interchange with the parks. Now, the next phase of stimulus that Congress has been talking about and is on the horizon is the Jobs for Main Street Act. This bill has actually passed the House of Representatives and will be taken up by the Senate. We are told that it will provide transportation funding, specifically on the highway side, at or about the same level that we had in the last stimulus bill. The big difference that we have in this bill as compared to the last is 50% of the money must be under contract within 90 days. The last bill was 120 days to obligate. So that will place a great emphasis on all of us to be able to get the authorization and then get those jobs out and underway to be able to capture the money for Alaska.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How does this jive with our procurement process in the state? Are we going to be able to meet that 90 days? Are we going to need legislation to allow us to accept this with a 30-day hearing process, a public notice, and then contracting in 90 days? Seems like we're pushing up against our limits for doing some of these projects. So will you be coming to either this committee or another committee for legislation to maybe amend some of our procurement process, or can we operate under this 90-day requirement that the feds have put on us?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, very good question. And two slides down the road, you'll see the timeline that I'm going to be talking about to be able to meet that 90-day. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I will address those points when I get to two slides down the road. What we've done so far, based on the input that we're getting from Congress on the timelines and the need to be able to follow the Title 23 regulations and processes, is that we have actually put a STIP amendment out on the street with projects that DOT has had or feels we can accomplish within that 90-day timeline. We're under that same requirements that the projects that we provide or go forward with must be Title 23 eligible projects, meaning they must have followed all the necessary processes to get to the point of actually getting obligation from federal highways and allowing us to go under contract. So we have a step out on the street. We also put out a call to communities and to tribes to say, what do you have out there that will meet this timeline that we see in the jobs bill? And we've gotten comments back from them on projects that they believe will, again, follow that Title 23 timeline. We're now reviewing those projects and vetting them to see if they've actually meet that timeline, and then we'll be looking for a future STIP amendment to be able to capture that money, but it'll likely be in the second 50% of the funding to be able to, because of the aggressive timeline.
Frank, I do want to ask you a question here. Did you come across any of the communities that thought they were ready last year but weren't? And sometimes I think communities think that they're ready, and then maybe they find out that they haven't crossed all their T's or dotted all their I's. So how do you think that's going to go?
We did have some communities that clearly identified that they thought their projects were ready. In terms of working those projects with the community and then with our funding partner, FHWA, we found out that they weren't. The processes for the environmental documentation or the right-of-way certification or their utility relocation wouldn't meet the guidelines and timelines that we had to fund the projects. We had a project specifically that said and had worked through a very experienced design firm that knew our design processes and timelines, and they said they were ready to go. But again, in the further review with our federal partners, more work had to be done, revisiting the environmental document, going out and certifying the right-of-way again, and then utility relocation again. So it's taking us right to the very end, then we hope that we'll be able to obligate that project.
Okay.
This timeline that you see here was, again, under the first stimulus bill, 120 days to obligate. Obligate is where we put in our paperwork to the Federal Highway Administration to essentially enter a contract that says we've met all the requirements of Title 23. In the jobs bill, it's 90 days to contract. Contracts where we put out a bid on the street, contractors identify what their bids are, and we go through the procurement process to do certification of the bids, and then actually get them notice to proceed. That period right there is the most aggressive period that we see out there. In our conversations with DC, we say that is extremely aggressive for all the states to be able to meet that guideline. But Congress says we want jobs on the street. We don't care what your process is. Either use the money or someone else will. So we feel that we have developed projects and we'll be able to work with Fed Highways to get the obligation of those projects first, and then be able to put the contract out on the street following our normal timeline. But it is going to require all of our staff to work very diligently to be able to do that. In terms of what the question of Representative Johnson, what are we going to do for legislative authorization? In our conversations with the Office of Management and Budget, they believe that we have legislative authority that we'll be able to work through the LBNA process to be able to capture those funds.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there the same stipulations on this, that they have to be new projects, not pre-planned or pre-approved, and we can't go in something that we've already approved that we may have partially funded and make up the difference? And the last stimulus, it seemed like they had to be new projects. Is that same kind of guidelines in the House bill now that will prohibit us from maybe dipping into our reserves that we've already got well planned and well down the road?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, you're talking about the maintenance of effort requirements that were placed on us
right.
And that was really where the states had planned projects using state funds
right.
to be able to accomplish, and they didn't want these new funds to displace those previously programmed state funds. We're planning projects that are, again, had not been planned to use state funds, but were projects that had worked through, again, the federal process to get us to the point of allowing us to use federal funds.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I understand that's what you're doing, but is that a requirement in this legislation? I think it was in the last legislation. Is it also in this one?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'll have to defer to my expert, Jeff Otteson.
Mr. Otteson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jeff Otteson, Program Development Director at DOT, and to Representative Johnson. At first, we thought last year that we couldn't take projects out of the pipeline, the design pipeline, and just grab them and spend them on ERA. It turned out, in the end, that was okay. And in fact, most states had to do it to meet the deadlines. Now, I'm sure this time, to meet this deadline, we would have to grab any available project that can meet this deadline. That would be the most overriding selection factor, because 45 days is remarkably short. When you consider that the average federal aid project these days is taking 7, 8, 9 years to go through that process. You don't start tomorrow and develop a project.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson?
Certainly, but not now, I don't think.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Pascvan?
Yes. Madam Chair. How many projects does DOT statewide have that can meet that immediate availability in dollars and numbers of projects?
166.
Through the chair, Senator Pascvan, $166 million is what we've identified of DOT projects that can meet that. So that's well over half of 175 that our deadline is on. A lot of those are either projects that are already underway, had some design work done, or there's one class of work that we can do very quickly, which is the repavement projects. We did several of those last year. They require very little environmental work and permit work to get ready. So those are the kinds of projects we've identified. We've also got some projects that are quite frankly in the pipeline right now that were going to be a regular 2010 project. We could grab those and use those as well.
Follow-up? Yes. Senator Pascvan.
Just approximately how many projects, in other words, I understand the magnitude of it's $166 million, but how are they distributed around the state? How and how many projects are we talking that are capable of meeting this requirement? Just as an estimate, we need an exact number.
Through the chair, Senator Pascvan, it looks like about 16 projects. They're spread out across the state from southern southeast Alaska through the Kenai Peninsula in the Anchorage area, Fairbanks area, and eastward on the Richardson Highway. So they're pretty much mainline projects, those roads that are DOT highways that really provide the greatest amount of traffic. But again, as Jeff said, it's the mill and overlays that I just described on the Glen Highway. Relatively quick projects to develop, not great environmental documentation requirement. We own the right-of-way, and we can certify it and get it out the door.
Thank you.
And that was our Deputy Commissioner, Frank Richards.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Jeff, are there any differences between a project that is funded under this stimulus money different than one that would go through the normal STIP and federal highways process and general fund match? Say if there was a road that a community had in the pipeline that was going to be funded through the regular process, and we get a bunch of money like we did last year, and it's funded with that money, say like a section of road with a bike path, and a project comes up, is there a possibility for any of those projects to change in scope because of the different funding source?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, the funding requires us to follow the Title 23 requirement that says we must go through the process of developing the projects with environmental documentation, right-of-way certification, utility, and the design processes. That is like any of our other federal highway projects. If there is an existing project that you're anticipating adding a scope change to, what that would likely require was, again, a revisitation of the environmental document because there would be additional scope. Reopening that document, there's timelines that have to be followed to be able to meet that, and that could potentially delay a project to meet this initial obligation of 50%. Again, that initial 50% of the money has to be under contract within 90 days. So on average, that's about, could be up to $85 or $90 million. To re-scope a project, an existing project now, it would be very difficult.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Frank, can these only be state projects? Can we can this money go to city projects that are ready to go? Is there a separate process that they have to go through? Will everything be funneled through DOT? If you've got a community, Fairbanks, Ketchikan, any place that has a ready-to-go project, can we just assign them the money to do it if it all meets all the requirements? Or what's the process, if there is one, that would allow that to happen?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson. Well, in your case, Anchorage, they'll be receiving a fraction of this 175. Their amount will be about $19 million, the same fraction they received last year, and that formula is set in law, determined by the legislation. So they will have to put that on their tip, run it through the AMATS board, select those projects, and ultimately execute them in the same very fast timeline. So for other communities, if they have a project ready that has followed the federal process, they would be eligible to apply and receive money. But by and large, we find that communities don't follow the federal process if they have another funding source. I mean, the federal process is more onerous, more burdensome. So nobody follows that process deliberately with a small chance of federal funding in the future. They tend to follow a much quicker non-federal process, and then they are not eligible for these dollars.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just would like to ask to get a copy of the projects that you have, the 165, that you looked at a document that had them listed in a total, if I could get that, if it's not confidential. And I guess the other thing, so we really don't have $175 million. We have $175 million, what, I think Anchorage and Fairbanks are the only two that qualify, have the stip and tip kind of process, so they'd be the only two. So 19 for Anchorage, and how much for Fairbanks is coming off this 175?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, last year under the legislation, there was the way the formula worked, Fairbanks was dealt out. They ended up with zero. That was just, it's due to a formula that's been sitting in federal law for 10 or more years, and it was just the result of that. So we ended up eventually giving Fairbanks money out of the regular program to kind of make them whole. It appears we may have to do that again, although Fairbanks is trying to see if they can get the legislation amended in the Senate so that they would also get a share of this 178.
Madam Chairman, am I correct that Fairbanks and Anchorage are the only two that would
that is
have
correct.
A process that would even allow it? So we're only talking about the $19 million out of this?
Let me clarify, if I may, Representative Johnson. The money comes to us in actually four categories. One of them is the category for AMATS. Another is a category, 3% of the money goes to transportation enhancements. So we have to have enhancement projects, typically sidewalks, trails, that sort of thing, waysides. Approximately 30% of the money was set aside for communities under 5,000 in population. And then an overarching requirement is that we give priority to communities that are in economic distress. Last year that was a soft goal. We're being told this year that is a firmer goal, that we have to give more priority to those communities that are measured by federal standards to be in economic distress. So that's a moving target. There's actually fewer communities this year in distress than there was last year.
Representative Johnson, and I might remind, I know it's kind of hard, especially when we're talking almost like a one-to-one, but if you just mention your name before you talk, the people online can keep track of who's talking that way, and it helps our secretaries. So if you can just kind of remember to say which one of you are talking, that'd help out. Thank you. Representative
Thank
Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And also, if it's not, I understand it's a moving target, but those communities that are maybe the regulations that dictate what communities are under economic distress, and maybe the communities that in Alaska that are, and also I guess it would a federal declaration, emergency declaration from the feds, which I think we may be looking at some areas in the state now, would they qualify, and is there anything that would allow any provisions different than this in that? And these are questions you may not have the answer to yet, but I would like at some point to address the ability to funnel some of this money to emergency declaration communities, economics, whatever the reason may be, and just see it. But if I could get a list and maybe those statutes or regulations of the feds, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if the borough is underneath an economic distress and they've, you know, filed that kind of paperwork, would that somehow give funds to that area that they were not able to get last time?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, Frank Richards speaking. under the bill, I'm not aware of any emergency declaration provisions that would allow a certain percentage of the money to be targeted towards an economic distress. As Jeff identified in the last bill, the economic distress was a soft target. It was an emphasis that Congress placed on us, and it was an emphasis that the administration asked the states to spend money in economic distress areas, but there was never a set dollar amount placed on us that we had to reach that level. Whether or not the unemployment rates are defined under emergency provisions different than the regular federal provisions on emergencies, I am not an expert on that, and I'd have to get some help from our Department of Labor or even the Federal Department of Labor. Again, this bill is in front of the Senate. They will likely make changes to the bill and modify it with their provisions, and that's where City of Fairbanks North Star Borough is actively pursuing, as Jeff said, the ability for the Fairbanks Metropolitan Planning Organization to get an allocation under this funding.
Thank you.
If you can kind of find out that question, if you don't know it now, but by the next time we meet, if you can let us know or at least give me the information so that I can pass it on to the committee.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Otteson.
Chairman Wilson, to help amplify the question about economic distress, the one thing that we were allowed to do last year was to make a case for a subset of a census area or a borough. Say it's not an economic distress, you can demonstrate through statistics that that particular pocket of that borough is in distress, or if it was considered a loan, would meet the criteria of economic distress, you were allowed to make that case. So you could have, we have very large census tracts in this state, and you may well have the overall borough or census area not in distress, but still have pockets of distress within it. So it really is a make your case, find your facts, and present them.
Okay, thank you. Senator Passman.
Yes, on a more macro basis, assuming that this stimulus package 2 comes out and we have, you know, multiple years of compression of scheduling, is there a concern that DOT has in the future that there may be difficulty in getting projects, for example, 3 years off the shelf and into construction? In other words, you compress so much so quickly, what are your thoughts on that subject, that we may, as a transportation committee, have a concern 2 years out, 5 years out?
Through the chair, Senator Passman, what we experienced this last year with the stimulus bill and our regular program is that the extra money that we were afforded took care of many of those shelf projects that had been waiting in the queue for funding, and it allowed us to advance projects to get out on the street for construction, you know, a year or two in advance of what we had originally thought it would be. We as a department and our designers, our construction folks, and those of the consultant community who are assisting us are all chugging very hard to be able to reestablish our projects to get those ready so we'll be able to have those to put out on the street. It's a full court press. We're working hard and developing those projects and starting the new design so we'll have those projects in the future to be able to put out on the street.
Okay, thank you. I think we can go on.
Madam Chairman, the next slide, many of you may have received in the mail from an organization called the Reason Foundation, a report on the nation's highways. And in that report, they designated or denoted the Alaska highways were the worst in the nation. Well, we take exception with that. When we looked at the report and looked into how they made their determinations, we found out that they didn't take into account for our extensive gravel sections of highway. They didn't take into account that our rural interstate system has unique characteristics as compared to those in Middle America or on the coast. Our interstate system is not a controlled access four-lane highway. We are a two-lane rural road with driveways and side streets coming in, so therefore there's traffic coming on that pulls gravel onto the highway system. And what they were making their determination on was roughness, the International Roughness Index. Many of you, when you did the house transportation tour, had the ability to ride along in our van, where you could actually see the road roughness as you drove down the road. Well, it was those indices and those collective efforts that this organization used in their determination that Alaska's highways were too rough. And they included our gravel roads in those roughness calculations. So therefore, it tipped us over into an area that we feel was unfair. You can't compare apples to oranges in that case, where you've got a four-lane Interstate 95 as opposed to the Dalton Highway and the areas of discontinuous permafrost and the challenges that road has. They also took into account on funding per mile, where they actually penalized the state's operating and capital costs because they included the marine highway capital costs into our per mileage calculation, but didn't include the actual run length of the marine highway. So it tipped us over and dropped us down considerably. We felt that their statistical method was flawed based on the reasons I just told you. You know, the roughness issues, our design aspects, the maintenance, our construction season, and we feel that we are going to work, we have tried to work with the Reason Foundation to present what we felt were more rational indices and Alaskan specifics. But I just wanted to present to you our side of the story because we're proud of our highway system and the people that work on it, the marine highway system that we have and the services we provide to all Alaskans. So we took offense at this report.
That, does that mean that the next time we see a report like that, we will have gone up?
Yes, ma'am. In terms of reporting of the roughness index, we will not be reporting on gravel road roughness. So you should see that the Alaska skyrocket up.
Good.
As you heard from the governor last night, there are initiatives that DOT has been authorized to move forward with, the deferred maintenance initiative. Out of the $100 million, DOT has been allocated $25 million. We have looked at the needs that we have in our deferred maintenance. And again, this isn't the reconstruction efforts. This is actually maintenance that isn't going on sufficiently, and so we're deferring it down the road. We have nearly three-quarters of $1 billion worth of deferred maintenance across the modes, highways, aviation facilities, our marine highways, and our ports and harbors. So out of that, we have defined that allocation out of the $25 million. We are continuing our work efforts on the highway safety corridors to try and make those roadways that are designated highway safety corridors safer. We are advancing the efforts that we have started this last year on the roads to Umiat and the road to Nome. And we're also advancing the crime lab, as the governor described last year, with $75 million to take that building to construction. And then again, continuing our efforts on the Dalton Highway because of the importance of that road to the state and our economic well-being.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't mean to get too specific here, but there's a couple areas of concern as it pertains to maintenance. Last summer, we had a problem in Anchorage with some of the state roads not being maintained to a point where some of the community activists were out there shoveling the dirt and sand off the sidewalks, and I think there was a problem with the contractor that you had hired. I just wanted to make sure that has that been rectified for this summer?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, if you will give me a few minutes, I will be glad to get to that specific point of the street sweeping and what the federal mandate has, that has recently been placed on us.
All right. Well, here's my next question. Maybe you're getting to that, too. The New Seward Highway had several accidents this year, and I don't know, 8, 9 people died, too many people. And I think that's in the governor's budget, but I wasn't sure what exactly was going to be done.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I'm going to talk in more specifics okay. about the highway safety corridor.
So, stay tuned.
I don't mean to take your thunder away from you, but I will.
I thought you were getting ready to go on the airport, so I wanted to catch you while you're still on roads.
No, sir. I'm going to highway safety corridors and the efforts that we have going on there are a major effort that we are undertaking, and we want to give it its just due.
Okay.
Briefly on the operating budget. Approximately $542 million for the operating budget of the DOT, of which $236 million is general fund. The capital budget this year is about $823 million, $149-150 million of general fund, and the remainder federal funds.
Senator?
Yes, through the chair to
Menard.
Can you share with us how many employees are currently in the DOT department?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, we have approximately 3,400 employees. That's across the spectrum from the marine highways to our highways and aviation, our design, construction, planning, all functions.
And is it true that we have in-house architects as well as surveyors?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, we do have in-house surveyors, but to my knowledge, if we do, we may only have one architect in the organization.
Because I'm hearing in our community there's a real pushback on that as far as outsourcing these professional services that could be done, and that's for another discussion, but I have some constituency that are very upset that why does DOT have these kind of professional services in-house when they could be more in the private hands. So if you can get back with me on that, because as rumors start, you know, I'm hearing more architects than just one. So.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, I'd be glad to get back to you. I mean, off the top of my head, I know that we do outsource, again, with our partners in the consulting community, a tremendous amount of work. I believe in our central region, we're over 70% of our design efforts are done by consultants. We are now expanding our construction management and oversight services so that now represents almost over 40% of the work that is done in that area is done by consultant services. So we know that those members of the consulting community are important to us. They provide an added services to the department and to the state, and so now we feel confident that we are doing our job and working with our partners.
It just is a hot topic because, you know, as if you look back, say 20 years ago, our population hasn't grown that, and it was under 2,000 employees, and now DOT is so huge, it's like a machinery going, and there's just been talk about, you know, how did we get to this point? Are we outsourcing like we really need to? And so, I just...
Through the chair, Senator Menard, I'd be glad to have that conversation, and again, we have had, since my time with the DOT, we've seen our programs rapidly grow, whether it be on the highway side and specifically on the aviation side, but we have not grown the department employee level doing the design and construction services. So we've now shifted then towards using our consultants to be able to fill that gap as those programs have grown.
So there's just discussion about public works department versus, you know, so we'll have that discussion.
Be glad to.
Madam Chair,
Representative Johansson.
On your capital budget, your general fund at $150 million, GF, and $675 federal. How much GF was required for match, and what is the balance of the rest of the GF that's not required for federal match?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I have the numbers here. We request general fund match, again, on different proportions for our highway program, our transit program, and our aviation program. So if you you give me a second, I can provide that to you. Federal aviation match is, looks to be about 8.6 million. Federal aid highway state match at about 36 million. And federal transit, no, that's grants. So we're in that $45 million range, Representative Johnson. I may be missing some of them, but specific match.
Okay, follow-up, Representative Johansson.
So about $45 million GF to capture the 673 federal?
Yes, sir.
Okay. No. Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the $673 million recognize the federal authorization, the reauthorization, and has that taken place?
Through the Chair, Representative Munoz, if you're talking about the highway reauthorization, right now we have, Congress is in, has punted that authorization down the road while they've been dealing with health care, looking at climate change, and then the stimulus bills. We have been told to anticipate similar funding in federal fiscal year 10 as we had in federal fiscal year 09. So that's what we built the budget to, in anticipation of those same federal receipts.
Follow-up, Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we still receiving a monthly estimate of that from that fund, from the federal fund sources?
Through the Chair, Representative Munoz, I think the first continuing resolution was about a month, then they extended it out to 6 or 8 weeks, and I would have to defer to Jeff to tell me when the next one is due.
Let me start from here. Jeff Otteson, through the Chair, Representative Munoz. They recently extended it till about the end of January, so we've got three extensions so far, and we're waiting for them to obviously bring along the fourth extension. There is a year-long extension contained in the jobs bill. So if the Senate were to pass the jobs bill, then there would also be a full extension of safety lieu for the fall of 2010.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Moving now to accomplishments. In 2009, we are very proud to say that the A&B Terminal, A&B Concourses at the Ted Stephen Anchored International is open for business. It's been nearly a decade of construction at Ted Stephen's Anchorage International, from starting with Concourse C, then shifting over to Concourse A and B. All the domestic carriers are now operating out of the South Terminal, and all of the internationals are operating out of the North Terminal. We've installed a connector between the two, so now there's a good free flow of passengers able to connect between those two terminals. This project came in on schedule and under budget. That's a major milestone. We used an innovative contracting called Construction Manager at Risk, CMCG, and it worked out very well. Good cooperation with the contractor, between the state, and we're able to do it under budget. So that's wow. a major milestone. It's open for business.
That's major, because that doesn't happen too often.
This is an indication of the single checkpoint, rather than having this single checkpoint does provide access now to A, B, and C concourses, and it provides for a nice fast flow with a lot more room for folks to be able to queue up and get through that checkpoint. We reused some of the jetways that were on Concourse B and have reattached them, so we saved the project from having to buy new jetways. Then moving to Fairbanks, yet another project that came in on schedule and under budget. This was opened in May of this year. It was authorized at about $96 million, but cost about $92.3 million. This project has been awarded the 2009 Honor Award for Design by the Alaska Chapter of American Institute of Architects. And that is a milestone for us to be able to have both terminals at our international airports up in such good condition. Another big project that happened at Fairbanks was the reconstruction of its runway and cargo stand. The runway designated now 2 left, 20 right was had to be completely rebuilt in terms of its subbase and its surface, so we shifted the air traffic onto the parallel taxiway. planes were landing on the taxiway while we were reconstructing the runway. It worked without a flaw, no major incidents, and we were able to complete that for a cost of about $43 million. The heavy cargo apron now gives us more hard stands so that when we do have the heavy cargo guys coming in there, they have a place to light. And that's now using, and you can see when we have major diverts, it provides a good service to those trans-Pacific carriers. Now moving on to the road system. We opened up Dowling Road Extension. Many of you, some of you, were at the groundbreaking of that. This is one of our success stories because it's a general funded project which we were able to complete within 3 years. It again, with the Abbott, it connects between Abbott Road and Dowling Road, provides that new east-west corridor that can shift traffic away from the crowded Tudor Lake Otis intersection, and it has been a great success. To be able to open that that project up again in 3 years really shows the benefit of the state-funded projects.
Representative, or I'm sorry, Senator Myers.
I can't resist, Frank. I appreciate the Dowling Road extension between Lake Otis and Elmore. You did an excellent job. It's beautiful. It's really helping move traffic, you know, from the east side over to the west side. But as you know, we're not done with Dowling Road. We still are in hopes of going now from Arctic to Minnesota. I guess it goes Dowling and then Potter, but it's all Dowling. Is that still in the plans to continue chipping away at Dowling Road? I know we've been working on this for several years now, but we're certainly not finished. So I was wondering if maybe you could just give us the future of Dowling Road and when it might be completed.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes, you're talking about Dowling Road West.
Right.
Now, it'll be the next phase of that project. It's, as you said, going through Potter, and then it'll be a new alignment going through a wetland area. So we are going to have to do an extensive environmental document. And this road, as like 36 and many of the other roads that we've done over the last few years, is part of the Connect Anchorage Initiative. It was nearly $800 million worth of road work to be able to help it address the congestion issues in Anchorage and allow for better flow through and bypassing some of the very congested intersections. That next phase of Dowling West is, I believe, in the environmental phase. We're going to be going through that, and then we'll be coming back to the legislature again seeking the funding for the construction of that once we know what it's going to take to get through that sensitive area.
Okay, and I know your people have been meeting with the community councils in that area, and I appreciate that because there are some sensitivities not only to the wetlands but also the noise impact. Whenever you create a new road and the neighbors aren't used to a new road, they get upset or get concerned, I guess. But yeah, I do appreciate your efforts because once that's finished, it will give us a complete east-west route and relieve the traffic then on Tudor and Lake Otis, which has always been a major problem. I'm hoping to live long enough to see that actually get done, Frank.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, me too. But we will get there. That's our push, and truly with your help, in previous years, we've been able to get those Connect Anchorage projects out underway. This project, we anticipate diverting approximately 15,000 vehicles a day off of that crowded Lake Otis and Tudor intersection. So that's a major reduction. So we're advancing that with the Boniface work that we've got going on. There's going to be more east-west connections, and we'll be able to have that free flow of traffic.
Rep. Johansson.
Thank you. This project that we were at for the ribbon cutting, not getting the federal money involved in there, speeding up the whole process, which was kind of the whole point of that type of project. When we talk about the GF match and the capital being 60, 70 some, the leftover GF, is that what we're using for projects like this, where we're not getting the federal money involved so we can speed up the process? What's the other extra GF in the capital budget that's not used for match? I assume it's for projects like this, portions of it.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, it's for a variety of project efforts. We have the deferred maintenance. The $25 million for deferred maintenance is part of that. We have the Marine Highway System vessel and terminal overhaul. We have highway facility projects where we're doing the highway safety corridor work for $5 million. We have the Dalton Highway work, our Roads to Resources initiatives, and the state match, American with Disabilities Act compliance, bunkhouse replacement, anti-icing programs, regulatory compliance, a variety of projects that we have the needs for, and that's where the general funds allow us to accomplish.
Very quickly.
Rep. Johansson.
But this is where projects like that we want to speed up is going to fit into that. Projects like Shelter Cove Road, things like that.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yes, that's that. When we have an appropriation for to do a project, that's where this would it would show up.
And
follow up, Representative Johansson.
Is there a criteria to decide which projects get into that category of no federal funds mixed in? I get fast tracked. How do you guys choose which ones are lucky enough to get on the fast track where they get built quickly?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, it's again those initiatives like Connect Anchorage where we have identified the work previously on what it's going to do, what it's going to take to accomplish, whether it be the Dowling Road environmental impact work that needs to be done for the Dowling Road extension west or the Seward Highway expansion. It's we've built it into a program and identified a timeline to be able to accomplish that work. It's a lot of this money is again those regular annual programs that we have going on like deferred maintenance, and we've had the initiatives on Roads to Resources trying to open up or provide for access to state or state assets that will allow for job creation. So it's working through the process, presenting our recommendations through the governor's office, and then having the governor and the management budget make decisions on what level of general fund expenditures we're going to have in the fiscal year.
One more time, Representative Johansson.
I guess my question is there a formal process within DOT, or is it you guys just kind of look at what makes the most sense, or is there an actual process that community or a citizen or legislator could take part in to help you formulate those ideas, or is it internal completely?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson. No, it's a. We have gone out. We have developed plans in multiple areas of the state, whether it be the Southeast plan, the Southwest plan, the Copper River plan, Northwest, Southwest, the 2030 plan. It's in those that plan development where we get the public input on what they desire as major projects, what the department desires in terms of addressing such things as congestion or bad roads due to pavement conditions. And it's through that that we then, at the time of capital budget preparation, solicit those inputs from the regions of within the DOT to identify what are the needs and how do they fit in the plans to be able to meet the overall goal.
Okay, let's continue then.
Next up, Madam Chairman, in Southeast, we have the Sitka Roundabout, and this actually helped out considerably in the community of Sitka, where we had the intersections of Halibut Point Road, Sawmill Creek, and Lake Street, busiest intersection in Sitka, where we had a major high accident rates, and we were able to address that. They've got 11,000 vehicles a day that were going through that intersection, and we've put in place a roundabout that we feel is going to make that a much safer intersection. North Pole Interchange, up in outside of Fairbanks. This was a long-standing need between the intersection of Richardson Highway and Dawson Road. This provided a bridge over Dawson and provided, again, a safer intersection for the community of North Pole. And it was done, cost about $19.7 million, about 9% below the contractor's bid amount. So this was a project that, again, came in under budget.
Representative Wilson.
Through the chair, when you do projects like this, do you also look at the impact it may have on businesses when you change the on and off ramps? Because I love this project, but it has had a negative impact on some of the businesses because of some of those changes. So when you're looking at them, is there some type of process that you go through to say, if we change how they get on and off the highway, especially when it comes to tourism, we may or may not want to do that? Or is that up to the community to look at?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. We go through an extensive public process in terms of talking to the communities and the surrounding businesses and homeowners about the project and its impact on that community, and we do take those into consideration then when we go through the final design, because it's, we've had discussions with this committee in the past about context-sensitive solution, and that's really where we're out talking to the communities and getting their input to help with our final designs.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
Through the chair. When you do these public, I know you put through the newspaper, but if the community is more proactive, does that help so that more people can attend these meetings? I know we have this problem all the time. It's only in the newspaper or it's on the website. A lot of people don't pay attention to those kinds of things. You do any other type of advertising to get the word out when you're doing these projects?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we do. We'll do mailings. We'll do email notifications. We'll put it out in the print and news media as best we can. We actually have a service now within the DOT called eGov, where if people are interested in a project, they will then come in and sign up to be on an email list, so that they're generated and they receive information about specific projects or specific topics.
Great, thank you.
Okay, I don't see any other hands, so let's go ahead. Oh, Senator Paxton.
Yeah. Deputy Commissioner Richards, you indicated that the project was 9% under bid, and I guess the question that I have for you is, are you seeing that around the state, that the construction costs are uniformly coming under bid pricing, and so what is your lane mile cost, and is that, where are you at in that, and what do you project into the future? Do you see stability in lane mile cost, or kind of your general thoughts and the actual cost to complete as compared to your bid estimates? And obviously we're glad that it's 9% under. The airports were under bid, and both Anchorage and Fairbanks were. Where are we at in cost basis?
Through the chair, Senator Pasvan, in the middle part of the last decade, we went through a very high inflationary period where we're seeing construction costs going up double digits on an annual basis. And then we had 2008 occur, worldwide impacts. And what we saw last year is that our bid amounts came in substantially lower than our projected engineers' estimates. Then to have on top of that then actual projects coming in lower than anticipated costs, that's a wonderful thing. I would say it's not the usual. Normally, contractors will try and meet their costs as they bid them, because it's a competitive market and they want to be able to do the work for a fair dollar return. What we would say in terms of, are we seeing cost per mile standardized? Each project is different if you've got different appurtenances with it, if you've got covert work associated with it, or a guardrail with it, or a major embankment with it. So it's hard to say a cost per mile that is consistent across the state. If you're in discontinuous permafrost versus no permafrost, you've got impacts, trying to keep that frozen ground frozen. So I don't really have a number to tell you that we have a consistent cost per mile, nor can I say with any great specificity that we have projects that are coming in below the contracted bid amount.
Senator Pasvan.
I'm not interested in the cost per lane mile. What I'm interested in is the projections as far as, do you see stabilization of your cost analysis? In other words, each bid is based upon the anomalies of that particular project, and do you see that no matter what those anomalies are, that you're going to have a stabilization of your costs, or do you see inflation on the near-term horizon, or do you see stabilization at the bidding that you are currently under? Not a lane mile cost as if it's the same in Anchorage's, Fairbanks' as Barrow. I'm not interested in that.
Through the chair, Senator Pasvan, I guess one of the biggest challenges that we in Alaska have is, again, the price of asphalt. When we have a highway job that includes a specific amount of asphalt, we're seeing the cost of asphalt in Alaska much higher than our what we see in the lower 48. So that's a variable that I can't we would like to be able to say we have a certainty on that, but with the availability of what's coming out of Alaskan refineries and the need to import, that's where we see a big challenge in terms of the cost for future projects. I mean, we hope that we can provide, understand that our projects are going to be within a certain range and not have the high inflationary impacts that we had in the previous decade. We do our best to try and keep the cost within the project amounts that we've identified so that we're able to do as many projects as we have funding available.
Frank, I guess my question is when you have over or under spent, you know, and so you have extra money, what do we do with that money? Is that money just set aside so that you hope there's enough for another project? Does it go back into the general fund? Where does that money go when we complete a project and we've got some money left over? How does that work?
Madam Chairman, a good example is what we did with the stimulus projects and the process that we had with the legislative budget and audit. As we were having projects bid and projects coming in under our estimates, we had available cash to do more work. So we had to come back to the legislative budget and audit and present those projects to be able to get authority by the legislature to do that work. On our regular federal program, if we have projects that are coming in under bid, then we're able to advance more projects. We've been given the authority by the legislature to receive and expend the federal funds and granted match funds to be able to accomplish that work.
Okay, thank you. Representative Johansson.
If you see projects, there's a trend of them either being under bid or less expensive because of economy factors, et cetera, et cetera. What happens to projects, for example, Juneau Access? You put a price tag on it 2 years ago or 1 year ago. Just as an example, this may not be accurate information, but as an example, let's say you said Juneau Access cost X 2 years ago when the price of everything was super high. Now we're 2 years later and everything's coming in a little bit under bid. Do you go back and look at select projects and re-evaluate the price, or do you just pick certain ones, or do you do it for all the projects, for especially a big project like Juneau Access? I mean, that may come down a pretty big amount because it's a big project, but what do you do when the economy goes up and down and the prices and the bids are fluctuating? How do you go back and adjust that when you're making your internal decisions as to what to support as a department?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, by federal highway policy, and it may be statutory responsibility, we are required on those large projects over $100 million to do an annual financial plan.
Good.
That means we have to go back, review the project costs, come up with the latest costs, and then be able to report that to the Federal Highway Administration, because they're interested in, are we going to have enough funding? As we've talked before, with the STIP, we have to have fiscal certainty. So if a project cost is going up sky high, they want to know if you're going to go forward with this larger project, which ones aren't you going to be able to go forward with? We do take into account on our regular program is, again, we want our engineers' estimates to be accurate and good. So we have the folks that are working those estimates as they're coming in, spreading that information out. So if we're seeing a cost per ton of asphalt at X amount lower than we anticipated, we'll share that information throughout the department to make sure that we're putting together then good bid estimates, or good engineers' estimates for our program and program delivery.
Follow-up, Representative.
Do you have a lot of projects over $100 million?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson's, we do have a significant number of projects on the books that are working their way through the environmental phase that are in excess of $100 million.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Another success, Madam Chairman. The Alaska Marine Highway System, 92% on-time departures. We're meeting our customers' needs. And moving forward, we release our schedule. We've been releasing them earlier so folks can make their bookings, both for the winter-spring schedule that we released in the summer and then the summer schedule of 10 released in the fall. We're putting in place power management and fuel savings on our vessels that are equating to approximately 10% to 14% fuel savings. We have those outfitted now on the Aurora, the Tustamina, and the Matanuska, and they will soon be installed in the Kennecott and Columbia when they go in for major refurbishments. That helps in terms of our fuel consumption and the overall cost to the Marine Highway System. We will be moving forward providing wireless service on board the vessels. We're doing refurbishments right now, and we're upgrading the emergency evacuation boats so we have a safe operating environment.
Frank, it seems like I recall last year that the savings for putting those, governor, I don't know what they're called, but I call them governors or something like that, but for putting them on the ship so we know which, what speed is the best economical speed to go. And it seems to me like we thought we were going to have savings of like 10% to 20%. And what are our, now we've got them in place for some areas, some of the ships, what are we seeing?
Madam Chairman, I'd like Jim Beadle to come up and to be able to address and tell you how much he is saving through that.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Jim Beadle, and I'm Deputy Commissioner of Marine Operations at DOT. Madam Chair, I'd like to welcome everybody back to Juneau Number 1. The most experience we have is with the Aurora and Prince William Sound, and it's very much a cooperative effort between the guys on the bridge and the guys in the engine room to work together on the routes. The longer the routes, the more money we save. The longer that you can run at a certain economical speed, the more efficient it is. The Aurora has been doing fairly good, somewhere around 10-15%. The newer ships that you get it in, and we've got it on the Tustamina, running out the chain, we're getting numbers in, but we're just starting with it. We've only got a few months of experience. We put it on the Matanuska, and it actually caused problems with the Matanuska, and we had to shut it down. We're spending $300,000 putting in a whole new controllable pitch prop system on the Matanuska. That'll make that work. That's all happening this winter. And so we don't really have the data yet, and that's why the number that Frank gave you was from 10% to 14%. It's a variable. It depends on the ships. It depends on the runs. We hope to see really good results on the Columbia and the Kennecott, because all the way across Gulf, the 36 hours down to Bellingham, that's where we, you know, hope to see the higher numbers, and those ships use a lot of fuel, so.
Okay, thank you. And we do have one more question.
Yeah.
Senator Meyer has a question.
Yes, I do. I'll ask this on behalf of my friend here to my right. He's kind of shy. now that we know that ferries can be built in Ketchikan, i.e. the Susitna that you're building for the route between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Valley, are we looking at our future ferries to be built there in Ketchikan? And also, are we doing the maintenance repairs on our existing? I mean, it just seems sad that all these jobs and money are going south to Seattle when we can keep it here in Alaska.
So you've asked a couple of questions there. The next item up is the Alaska Class Ferry. We have slowed down the design process. We're all the way through the preliminary design process right now. We've had a lot of conversations with the Attorney General's office. We went down and met with some shipyards down south. We have been talking to ASD in Ketchikan to see what is the best method now to finish the final design and come up with a product that can really be built, the shipyard can indeed build. And further complications is the financial situation that's out there in the world today and getting the bonding that allows a shipyard to build a boat. And everybody is telling us, the legal side for the state, we had lots of problems with the Kennecott when it was done. They had lawsuits that went on for a couple of years after the Kennecott. We want to avoid all those issues. They're saying that we need to get a shipyard involved early in the system on the final design so that you're actually designing a boat that can be built by the shipyard, and that will make it easier to get bonding because you take away a lot of the risk. I mean, the shipyard was involved in the design of what they're going to be built. We are looking, we're putting together an RFP right now. That should be ready to go out to bid for like a 30-day posting sometime mid-February. Shipyards will have a chance to bid on it, put in an application. It'll all be ranked. As you just mentioned, Senator, ASD told the legislature last year they could build this ship. They have expressed interest in bidding on this contract. They know that it's a competitive bid, and they think they can compete.
Okay, so. Very good, and I appreciate that we need
follow
to
follow up.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that we need to keep
Senator Myers, competitive
and economical, but is there not a, is there a 5% preference for Alaska company?
Is the preference that's out there through the chair is, it's what's called an interport differential. It's not something that in-state gets an advantage for being in-state. Is what it is if the ship has to go from here to somewhere, you know, Florida or Portland or Seattle, whatever the cost involves of us getting that ship there, that's added into the bid price of the shipyard, whoever's bidding it. So the advantage that Ketchikan gets is they're right here where our vessel is. We take them off the run in Ketchikan, they go right into the shipyard. If somebody else gets the bid, and it's all written in statute, we follow that statute. All the costs are figured out and added in. That's the additional. If somebody in Portland or somebody in Seattle or whatever shipyard gets the bid, that cost of getting the ship there is an additional cost onto their bid price. You asked the question about overhauls. There's two kinds of ways the state spends money. In our capital budget, you give us the money to keep the vessel certified by the Coast Guard to make sure everything works. All the ordinary things that have to be done every year or however long the certificates are, that keeps them certified, safe to sail and carry passengers. That's out of our capital budget. That is all general fund money. And as long as the shipyards in the state can do those, in fact, the Aurora and the Tustamina have to be done up at Seward Shipyard. And as long as they can handle the project, they do it. And normally, that's the way it's done. Same thing down here in Southeast. All the ships pretty much go into ASD for our general overhaul project. The complicating factor comes in is when it's called what we call a capital improvement project. If it is more than just an annual maintenance problem, we can use federal money. And that federal money saves us the state money, but when you use federal money, it goes to a little bidder. And that's why some of our ships, when we incorporate a capital improvement project, we still have to do the overhaul project during that period of time. And because an overhaul takes us about 6 weeks, we work it right in with the federal project. And that's what you will see. The Kennecott right now is down in Bellingham in a capital improvement project. During that capital improvement project, it's out of the water. All of the inspections will be done. All the Coast Guard stuff, underwater stuff is done. We will get our COI during the capital improvement project because it's much more efficient to do it during that time frame. And that's when you will see an actual overhaul being incorporated with a federal project. It saves us money. It saves us time.
Thank you. I know it's very interesting because I have constituents that will complain to me and they'll say, well, I know that they didn't do an RFP because it could have been done cheaper somewhere else, you know, and then you have other constituents that say the total opposite, so it's good for us to hear exactly the way it's done so that we can say, now wait a minute, this is the way that it's done, because I have constituents that complain to me on both ways. And so it's
a very good point that you bring up, Representative Wilson, and is what we do with those shipyards is we have negotiated prices. Rather than in a federal project, they have to go and bid on everything, and then the total thing goes to the low bidder. Everything we do with ASD, and we just went through a huge process of negotiating every little thing on every ship that we do, and we already know that. That's the only way we can go and say, this is what our capital budget's going to be, is we have pre-negotiated a price because you have told us where to spend that money. It's going to be spent at ASD, or it's going to be spent at Seward, and we go pre-negotiate the price. It's not a bid system. It's a negotiation between us and them, and they're long and hard. But ASD... very good working relationship with ASD right now.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Alaska Shipping Dried Up, owned by the state of Alaska through ADA?
Correct, ADA.
Operated by a local Ketchikan company?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, how are we doing for time?
We're doing fine. Just we will try to
condense it.
Yeah.
Okay. Very quickly, Madam Chairman, the highway safety corridors, again, these are roads that have been designated statutorily where we have high incidence of fatalities. Parks Highway, the Seward Highway, the Sterling Highway, Kennett Goose Bay Road in Wasilla, and I believe the Palmer Wasilla Highway. What we are doing on those highways, we're using the three E's, as we call them, education, enforcement, and engineering. The education process is where we're identifying. Folks need to stay alert. No drinking and driving. Be cognizant of aggressive driving activities. We are putting out advertisements through news media, through radio, through the internet, through commercial television, and hopefully getting that message across to Alaskans and to our visitors. I've given you two web links here if you're interested in seeing the media. If you haven't seen it already, it's really quite educational. We, in the enforcement realm, we are partnering with the Department of Public Safety. They have created by the Bureau of Highway Patrol, where they're in their second year. They now have 28 officers that are assigned to the Bureau of Highway Patrol, and their specific task is, again, watching out for highway safety in the areas of the highway safety corridors and in Fairbanks because of some incidents up there. That they are being funded currently by a grant through our highway safety office. That's I believe a four-year grant that will provide them approximately $4.8 million to be able to accomplish this work. We are seeing reductions in accidents. We are seeing the effects of the education, and we're seeing the benefits of the engineering that we are doing. Our fatality rates are down over 40% over the last 4 years on the Parks and Seward Highway. That is a major goal. I mean, that is a major success story.
Say that again, how much?
We are down 40% on the Seward and Parks Highways. Safety projects elsewhere. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Down 40% on the Seward and Parks Highway, and we had 12 fatalities this year, more are in the last 12 months on the Seward to between Glen Al or between basically Potter Marsh and Seward. Did you forget to add those?
No, sir.
So this hasn't been an extraordinary, the 12 deaths in the last 12 months have not been an extraordinary amount. We're still down 40%?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the highway safety corridor is, again, not all-inclusive of the Seward Highway. So there were accidents that were outside of that Seward Highway safety corridor. So I'm giving you numbers specific to that segment of the highway. The tragedies that happen on all of the Seward Highway and all of the Parks Highway are truly tragedies. I'm just trying to specify the benefits of the highway safety corridors in my numbers.
Thank you. And
follow-up, Representative
thank
Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I appreciate that, and I did want to clarify that because the numbers seem, you know, I have constituents that will be calling me tomorrow because that is my border. And I think Senator Myers also shares that. I'd have people calling me tomorrow saying, where in the heck the 40% number come from? So that is specifically the corridor, which I think is the way station to Girdwood,
from Potter, from the base of Turnigan Pass,
right
through to the Potter way station.
So anyone who is a fatality between the way station and downtown Anchorage and Turnigan Pass and beyond is not figured in that 40% number, just for clarification.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, that is my understanding.
Johnson, but that's okay. We're
Johnson,
used to it.
Sorry.
I charge it in the cafeteria, too. May I have a little different issue?
Representative, thank you. You know what? We've got five more minutes, and maybe we can, because we'll have five more minutes. If we don't finish now, we can continue at another time. But I just want, I don't know whether there's an area that you can stop, but I don't have a problem with you,
This should be fairly quick, but it never is. There is a, we attended the same meeting in Girdwood about the fatalities and stuff, and there was a big push to phone in bad drivers. If you see drivers, they wanted a big push, and even bumper stickers. You know, if you see a reckless driver, phone in between Girdwood and Anchorage. That was part of the plan, and I think that's part of the educational process. We have a bill that will be coming before us about not using cell phones, and I'm wondering what Representative Dugan, and I believe you're maybe a co-sponsor on that, Madam Chair, or am I mistaken?
I think so.
So what's your position on that? Is if we use it, we try to exempt people calling in reckless drivers. That's one point, and maybe you don't want to answer it now. But the other one is the zero tolerance bill, where I think it's more of an upgraded traffic corridor where there's a zero tolerance for any violation that I think has been introduced by Representative Hawker. Have you formulated or taken time to formulate an opinion on any of those two pieces of legislation, and where does that fit into the traffic corridor and the success that you're having now? If you're not prepared to answer that, that would certainly make for a shorter, within our 5-minute period. So.
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, I apologize. I have not read that proposed legislation, but I'd be glad to come back and identify the department's position.
Thank you.
And Senator Menard, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. No, just that because this is the largest department in the state of Alaska, in the future I'd like our committee to look at just dealing maybe with Marine Highway, because we can bring him back for airports, bridges, and just because we never seem to get through the PowerPoint presentation. There's just such a, you know, great amount of information. So I think we just have to schedule it in that we can have more overviews, but break this department down.
Through the Chair, Senator Menard, we'd be glad to come back and talk to the committee at any point.
I know that. You're very gracious about that. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, if I might, with my few remaining moments, I'd like to address Senator Meyer's question, and if you would care to go to slide number 37. And this has to deal with Anchorage street sweeping. The reference that the Senator made to the community efforts on sweeping up sidewalks and bike paths this last summer had to deal with a challenge that we had with contract, which we had in place to sweep our roads. We took every effort we could to add additional assets to be able to meet the needs, but again, there were community folks that went out there and put their shoulders to the grindstone and actually helped us out, including legislators. What has happened in the intervening time frame is the USC EPA has come out with new guidance on their multi-sector general permit, which has to do with the Clean Water Act. And all of Anchorage must comply, all the road systems within Anchorage, that's the municipality and the state of Alaska, must comply with new multi-sector general permit. That means we have new street sweeping requirements that are placed on us by this permit. And the schedule that we now must meet is for our major roads, the highways and arterials, every one of them must be swept twice before June 1st. We must sweep them twice more before October 1st. And then for our secondary roads, it's once before June 1st and twice before October 1st. That means that we are going to change our sweeping by regulatory action, essentially. And we will be coming to the legislature looking for operating funds to be able to comply with that, because it's essentially an unfunded mandate that we have now experienced. So we are going out, and we have developed now new contracts with these new aggressive timelines to be able to meet them. But again, it'll come down to the ability to acquire funding to be able to accomplish that. It adds approximately $2.2 million a year to meet this federal requirement.
Madam Chair?
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for addressing the sweeping of the streets. I think my second question, though, had to do with how we're going to improve the safety and reduce the number of deaths on the New Seward Highway. And I think the governor has money in the budget to address that, but I wasn't sure what. And the second part of that is that it troubles me a little bit that we're only tracking the number of fatalities on a certain section of a highway. I mean, I would think we'd want to track it from Anchorage all the way to Seward or Homer, Alaska, rather than just between the way station and wherever. So,
through the chair, Senator Meyer, we actually track all the fatalities on all the highways in the state. We are down approximately 24% on a statewide basis on average across the state. We have dropped by far the largest percentage of any state in the nation in terms of the reduction in fatalities that we have on our highway system. So when I was talking specifically, it was the reduction on the highway safety corridors. Statewide, we're down 24%.
Okay. Now, so what are we doing to the new Seward Highway with the additional money the governor's put in the budget?
And you know what? I think what I'd like to do, because I promised our next group that they would have a half an hour. And so we'll continue this next Tuesday.
Okay.
And we'll check to see how that's going to work out for everybody. But the Senator Kukesh and I are tentatively going to put this for next Tuesday. And we'll continue right from where we're at right now. And if that's okay with you to answer that question next week, because we would like to get to our next group. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And we'll take a slight at ease in the meantime. Okay. Bloomberg would like to ask a
Mr.
question.
Mr. Beadle, this is for you.
Let me get back to you.
I don't need an answer now.
I'll just slide out.
I'd like you to have the weekend to think of the answer.
Okay.
I took a trip on the Tustamina last week with two gentlemen and some wire.
So what, the wire was on board?
You bet.
Okay. That would be the best.
And so I would like maybe, I think you all read about the wire and these two guys, and they allegedly stole over $110,000 worth of wire from the Matanuska Telephone Association.
You know what, he will give us information next week, and we thank everyone because we really need to get to the next group.
I need to know what the procedures are, how this happened.
Okay, our next item on the agenda is the Community Transportation Task Force. And Camille, if you would like to go ahead and just introduce yourself and your affiliation, because I want to get you going right away.
Okay. First of all, thank you, Madam Chair, Representatives, Senators, for allowing us to present this. Matter of fact, it's our duty to. My name is Camille Ferguson, and I'm employed by the Sitka Tribe of Alaska as the Economic Development Director. I oversee Sitka Tribe's transportation program, and one of which is the one of the programs that I oversee with in partnership is the Center for Communities Coordinated Transportation Transit System, and it's the Community Ride. Now, before I really get into this, well, one of the things that I think is really fascinating is I was supposed to be here last night. Well, you know, it was a little foggy. Well, I got in this morning, and, you know, we're here for transportation, so I thought I'd share with you. While I was sitting in line, there were two other people that were with me, or not with me, but on the plane, but they were wheelchair-bound. One was an electric wheelchair, and the other was on a, you know, one that had to be pushed. And I just took it, you know, I take a lot of things for granted is my ability to get on a plane, to get where I want to go. And I always think Sitka's rural and Sitka's, and it's difficult in transportation. But then I also realize how lucky I am. Being on this task force has been really eye-opening, and that's something I really want to share with all of you, is that I had, being part of this, I got to see a little bit of what coordinated transportation really should happen within the state of Alaska and needs to happen. So with that, I do want to recognize we do have another task or a couple task force members in here in the room, and Andy Nations is not there. And we also have Jeff Otteson, who is our chair. And then we have our support group, which is DOT Eric Taylor, I know his name. But anyhow, we do, and then we have David Levy with the Alaska Mobility Coalition. And it truly, this truly is a coordinated effort. I want to say that right now, because it took all of us to create the PowerPoint presentation. I'm doing the presentation, and these guys are coordinating the answers that you guys are going to be asking at the end, and they'll have all of the answers for you, they said. So keeping that in mind, going to the next slide. First of all, last October, as you all know, Governor Sarah Palin signed Administrative Order 243 creating the Governor's Coordinated Transportation Task Force, other words known as CTTF. Well, the task force was asked to work on a couple projects. One was look at the role of the state's government in coordinated transportation. And then today, this is what we're doing right now, is kind of make recommendations to the governor and the Alaska legislator on coordinating transportation among state agencies, nonprofits, and of course local governments, local native governments, tribal governments as well. Now, looking, keeping that in mind, the governor had took an expansive view at coordinated transportation. And then also sensing that some of the transportation needs were not being met. Well, the task force was asked specifically to look at a broad range of unmet needs, especially for people with special needs. Now, a lot of people look at people with special needs sort of like I did, you know, yesterday on the plane. I looked at that person, two people, where they had special transportation needs. They also needed to coordinate other things that needed to go on, in which I found out at the airport that there was no coordination for these people. That, you know, Juneau has a wonderful caravan service, but I didn't see the caravan there. So these are just little tiny things that as I observed as I was coming here to present to you. Well, some of the people that you think about with special needs are listed here. We have, you know, of course, people with disabilities, senior citizens, preschool children participating in Head Start, public school students, low-income individuals, including those receiving public assistance in Medicare, and then those without access to existing workable transportation opportunities. Well, who we mean by that is our rural citizens in rural parts of Alaska. So, you know, looking at that, that's kind of a nice little way for us to start moving forward. Well, this is also kind of an eye-opening chart as well. Persons with special needs. Now, you look at people with special needs, and then you look at the percentages. The large percentage of persons with special needs are seniors and working people with disabilities. Keeping in mind that more than 25% of Alaska's total population is estimated to be comprised of persons with special needs. That's a pretty big percentage. Well, also keeping in mind us, and I like to throw that out because I have just entered the baby boomer age. The Alaska senior population is growing faster than almost any other state in the nation. And soon, you and I will be in that category. And so looking at these and addressing these issues now is really good foresight for all of us. Keeping that to us, and it was really nice to actually kind of tag behind the roads guys, you know, because if you think about it, you look at our state and how large it is, and then look at the roads that we have in this next slide. And then to know that more than 150,000 Alaskans live off the state highway system. Well, to me, most of those people, and it was real interesting because we had in Anchorage at our conference, I had an opportunity to talk to some of those participants that went to AFN. They were kind of like staying a few extra days to shop, to hear some of how they got just to a conference. It was amazing that they had to go take a little, first of all, a little four-wheeler to the river to catch the boat, to catch the puddle jumper, to catch the hub, to get to where they wanted to go, because they were that determined just to get to AFN. Imagine an emergency. You know, are all those things going to be set up? Now, once they get to where they're going, it's so important that they also have, that they have providers. Now, transportation providers are very important. Matter of fact, I oversee, I'm considered, our company is considered a provider. We have the ride, which does the fixed route, and it's real important to us. Matter of fact, I believe everybody here in transportation has a passion, and it's that passion that keeps you doing what you do. And I really like the idea that the providers are providing people transportation to jobs, medical appointments, school events, and social events. Currently, AMC is doing a media blitz, and I had an opportunity to ride the bus and interview the riders. And it is very important that they get to the grocery store. Some, that's their only means of getting to the grocery store. So, or getting to appointments. And then coordinating with hospitals to make sure that we're able to time those perfectly so that they can go to the doctor appointment and then get back on the bus and get back. And then also be able to coordinate with their funding sources that they might have. So providers are, the transportation providers are very important. Now, not only are, am I the only providers that there are, we also have plenty of others that you wouldn't really think about are providers, but are human service providers. I like to look at, especially like the senior centers, they provide a lot of transportation, some Meals on Wheels, or, you know, getting them just to social events. You don't look at yourself as a provider, but you are as well. Matter of fact, a lot of these rural communities will depend on somebody in an urban community to get them from point A to point B because they are not aware of how coordinating these transportation services are. This slide I find fascinating. To me, this kind of, in a nutshell, really, who supports human services? How many of you are aware that there are that many resources out there providing transportation for people with special needs or human services? To me, that's pretty incredible. I like especially that it points down to what looks like a stovepipe. Well, that's what it's supposed to symbolize, because it is. These funding sources have certain restrictions to them that create barriers that you can't cross over and maximize your resources. And sometimes these stovepipes have duplicate efforts going on. They're meeting the same person. They may be someone who's disabled, but they're also low income.
Camille? This particular slide, could you get us a copy of that in our paper? It's so small that I can't read it. And could you get us a copy that's a big copy of that particular slide so I could give it to everyone?
Oh, we sure can.
Thank you.
We sure can. And these are some of the things that, you know, you think you don't really look at but are pretty fascinating. As I move on to the next slide, this makes it the reason why this is so, pointing out that first slide is, and knowing that we're not coordinating as well as we can. Coordination is the most effective way to maximize your resources. We realize that, having our little small little coordinated agency in Sitka, we wouldn't be able to reach the out by the ferry terminal or out to the Sawmill Creek Industrial Area, not unless we were able to we coordinated with, of course, the tribe to fill in the central route, which was able to make us expand. We took the two resources together, which made it possible. Not only that, we also took the funding that was available for Meals on Wheels to coordinate or to help our paratransit system. That's what you call an example of some of the coordinating that is going on. So there is definitely coordination going on, and the purpose is definitely why we want to do that is so that we can make sure that we are connecting everybody to where they want to go and not leaving anyone out. Now, one thing is very, this is actually just a real, to me, a thought. Everybody has their idea what a highway is, right? Well, we were talking to people who have automobiles and interior, you know, if they get a car, the roads are their highway. Well, Southeast Alaska, I'm from there. The Osceola Marine Highway is my highway. It's my access to the villages, my social activities, seeing family, going to other medical facilities, or other people coming to my community to get my... So the Marine Highway is my highway. But be a special needs person. Be someone who needs to get from point A to point B. Coordination is their highway. And without coordination, their highway is broken. And it's like the broken Lost Marine Highway, or not meeting, you know, the roads not connecting someplace. So that's sort of a philosophy if someone's thought of, you know, this is what it means to them. Now, I know it's kind of in the middle, but the members that make up the CTTF are not experts in all in transportation. Matter of fact, they come from different areas within this segment of human services. We have people who represent low-income individuals, senior citizens, cultural diversity, social services, military and veterans affairs, municipal, people with disabilities, municipalities, and Department of Transportation and the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. All of us have come together not knowing what each other does, and I think that's what has helped this report that you have in your packet develop. Not only that, we also had other agencies such as Region 10, you know, which was really great, the U.S. Department of Transportation, U.S. Department of Health and Social Services, and then the OSCA VA healthcare system. They were our ex officios, also our consultants in the background. And so you see that there's a diverse group of people who are working on this, that have worked on this project. Now, this administrative order came with some tasks for us to do, and this is what we did. We did identify state and federal local government agencies, and that's where you see in that chart. We identify some of the barriers to coordination, as I'd mentioned before. We have recommendations within that packet of yours for you to review in the plan on how to remove some of those barriers. Proposed changes in the statutes and regulations. That is something that is also in our recommendations, is to look at that, and I'll be going over that shortly. And then to develop mechanisms and incentives for coordination. I mean, if you're going to institute a statute or regulation to coordinate, then there might be something out there that might make someone have some incentive to do that. And then identify available financing, which we had shown in that chart. And then develop a mechanism to ensure that services for persons with special needs in the state are coordinated and services are evaluated. We can set up this whole thing, but if we don't have a mechanism to evaluate what we've just done, it's kind of not serving a real good purpose. Now, what the CTTF did, and what we did, was complete all seven tasks. And in that, we did meet face-to-face. And we met in Juneau, Anchorage, Bethel, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. And we just did not just sit around the table and talk about this. The task force went out, experienced the roads, talked to the people in Bethel. We listened to public comment. So that we can get a really, really good understanding of the special needs transportations for special needs. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about in the process, and it was really heartwarming to me, it was in Fairbanks. There was a lady from Salsa. Salsa. It's about 70 miles out of Fairbanks. She has no transportation, public transportation, or really means of transportation. So that she can testify, she got a friend. She heard about this. She got a friend to drive her all the way in to Fairbanks. She came in on her wheelchair And she, you know, getting in, and her friend who had the car, it was not wheelchair accessible. You know, to listen to that, to realize that this means a lot to this person, that yes, I need to get to the grocery store. I'm important too. And because I'm not on the main road system doesn't mean I don't deserve service or service. So you can see that the need for coordination, and I'm sure there's an agency out there that probably could have helped, but coordinating these or finding the fundings is what, you know, we need to actually study and do. And so the public comment was really important to the task force. Now, the recommendations that the task force is bringing before you, and I'm going to put the four major one is to enact, as I mentioned before, is enact a statute that requires coordination for of communities that receive federal funding for transportation. To me, you know, that isn't really something that's new. Matter of fact, you have to have a coordination plan in order to receive federal funding. So it's not like we're asking anything new. We're requiring it because there are those agencies that want to access these funds that may need to know that you need to look at what's going on in your community and be a part of that plan. And then number two, and I think this is really important, is make specific state funds available to support operational expenses. Running public transit systems or operations funding is really hard to find. And what there is requires a very large match. If the state if the state puts aside, and that's that reward system for coordinating, it puts aside some money funding available to transit agencies to apply for federal grants, you know, and provides that match, funding that comes to the state can increase. Because there are a lot of communities within the state of Alaska that do not have the communities that can provide the required match. And if that funding was available, they could actually in turn, say for every $1,000 that they're getting from the state as required match, they're actually getting twice that, you know, is coming through the state of Alaska. We can actually access more federal funding. So that, you know, keeping that in mind, you can see where that would benefit not only the transit system, but the state as well as these agencies can access more funding. And then three is enrich and enhance the human service public transportation coordination planning process, revising and updating coordinating planning guidance documents and providing increased technical assistance. That in itself is real important. There's an amazing amount of people that did not know where to go to get assistance in public transit, to start up a public transit. You know, as much as we could put out there, there's still that Alaska is very large. There's tribes that are out there that transportation is new to them. Providing the technical assistance, it will be actually just helping us create the awareness and building the network that we need.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you very much. I appreciate us getting to this. This is the meat of the whole thing
right.
We're dealing with here. Some of the folks gave me some proposed legislation through the Mobility Coalition. Was that done through you folks? Were you involved in the drafting of that?
The Alaska Mobility Coalition. David Levy is the one that.
So that is one of your proposals. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Number two.
Follow-up Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, thank you. For the number four, funding and conducting a statewide needs assessment. Ms. Ferguson, what do you have in mind? How are you going to do it? Tell me what you would like to see. The number four there.
Through the chair. Right now, that is part of the plan. There is part of this plan that has the nuts and bolts of how things have to be operated. I believe this task force will be addressing those in the nuts and bolts, but by providing the needs assessment, we can get a true picture. How we're going to do that still needs to be looked at and assessed in itself by the task force.
Through the chair.
Just 1 second. Are you going to go? I know there's quite a bit more here. Are you going to go into any of this yet that he's talking about now?
No.
Okay, then go ahead, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. So that's still a work in progress.
Right.
Okay, because I hope that since you're coming to us, that, for example, on the number four, if you want us to do something, we need to really have a yesable proposition like the draft bill, because I can't tell from just the number four what you want. So I hope you'll keep in touch with us so that we can try to see if there's something that needs to be done, and then do it, and we know exactly what you want.
Madam Chair, I would actually, we do have other CTTFs, and see if they have anything that they would like to comment on this.
Okay.
Andy Nations.
Okay, come on forward. And
hi, I'm Andy Nations.
Can someone give her a chair?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Andy Nations. I'm the Executive Director of Statewide Independent Living Council, and I'm the representative for people with disabilities on the task force. One thing that I wanted to point out, on our recommendation number one here, we mention a statute, and a very important component of that statute is we're asking that a semi-permanent commission be appointed that would carry on the work that we started. Our administrative order was signed in October, but our whole task force wasn't fully formed until February. So we had from last February until about November of this year to do all of the work that you see here. So obviously a lot of it is a work in progress. If that commission were to be appointed, it could carry on this work, get it in a lot more in depth. We started pulling together statistics and other numbers on all these different agencies that are already providing transportation, but we were also looking at all of the unmet needs, because that's the key element here. It's the whole reason for coordination. If we can find out what the unmet needs are, unmet areas, as well as populations of folks that are not getting where they need to go, then we can put these things into place. But those are all in progress, and we haven't had enough time to accomplish those. So I just wanted to point out to you that that's an important element of what we're recommending, and we really hope that that work can carry on and be finished.
Okay, now could you tell us when is your time up? You had till what's the date?
Through the end of January. We're presenting our recommendations to the governor in February, and then the work of this task force is completed after those recommendations are.
Okay, and you're asking for
a commission to be appointed to carry on the work that we've started,
just to finish what you're doing. So how much time do you need?
Another 18 months, sunset of another 18 months.
Okay,
that's correct, right?
Yeah. Okay, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. As part of the bill that was presented, was the part that dealt with the council what you're talking about now, or was it something else other than what was in that draft bill? Because specific language was given talking about a council, and I'm wondering if that section is what you're talking about now.
Okay, state your name.
Through the chair, my name is David Levy. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Mobility Coalition. And to answer the question, former Governor Palin, in October of 2008, signed an administrative order creating the task force, asking for local communities, state government, tribes, and nonprofits around the state to take a look at the transportation issues in the area. The task force was created, or the administrative order was signed in October of 2008. The task force itself was not put together until March of 2009. I think one of the recommendations is it's really hard to capture the diverse transportation challenges in the state in 9 months. Recognizing that they are diverse from the interior to southeast to south central to our more rural parts of the state. It is the recommendation, I think, of the CTTF that there needs to be a longer-term look at transportation, and I think their recommendation is for either an additional 18-month administrative order, or more realistic is to kind of look at a permanent task force that looks at how transportation is provided in the state.
David, if you're looking at 18 months to extend this 18 months, what is the price for that? Do you know?
I would have to defer to through the division in our conversations with the department this morning. I think that runs around $50,000, and it's federal money, so there's not any additional. There is a fiscal note, but there's no additional cost to the department. But I may defer to my friend Jeff Otteson to answer that.
For the record, Jeff Otteson, Director of Program Development and also Chair of the Task Force, representing Commissioner Von Schaben. The federal government, specifically the Federal Transit Administration, encourages and requires that the state proceed with coordinated transportation. So in that regard, they're more than willing to see the funds they provide us be spent on things like a task force or a full-time commission. They're very supportive of this. In fact, Rick Corchalis, who heads up Region 10 of FTA, sat in our teleconferences, read our documents, provided edit comments. I mean, he was not a kind of an aloof task force member ex officio. He had his sleeves rolled up the whole time. So they will fund this. They will. They want to see this happen because the federal government is funding many of these different programs you saw on that one slide, and they do not want to see every single entity in a community with their own van, their own drivers, their own dispatch center, their own mechanic, when in fact you could coordinate that and bring those together and ultimately not only spend less money but provide better service at the same time. That's the heart of
it. I know
this.
I'm sounding kind of quick here, but we're at 3 o'clock and I wanted to get as much concise information narrowed down so that we know before you leave exactly what you want. So we're looking at a semi-permanent commission, at least another 18 months, about $50,000. But that's would just be our okay as a legislature because the money will come from the feds?
Yes, the money will come. If this is done temporarily with at the governor's decision through another administrative order, then it's really, I don't think there's really a role for a legislative action. But we certainly ultimately want to give you a package of legislation that makes recommendations for what you could do. I don't think we had time to do that package,
right. But
we see that as being necessary because with so many state government agencies involved, quite frankly, coordination is as good as two people willing to coordinate between two agencies. And if one of those people retires, coordination may end without something that makes it permanent.
Representative Gruenberg.
The draft bill I was given had a whole section on the council, And, you know, what the chair was asking is, what do you want? And if it was to be something permanent, was that language you were looking at, or was it something entirely different? Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, I am not familiar with the actual language. I know they've drafted it, but I've not had a chance to have my eyes
on
it.
We'll have to talk privately then. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, why isn't number four number one? Why are we going in and forming a commission and doing all this stuff and asking for legislation when we don't have a needs assessment to clearly identify the scope of the transportation needed? Why aren't we starting there instead of building a wheel around a car around a wheel?
Well, Representative Johnson, through the chair, we know the need is quite large. Specifically, we don't know. The problem is, if you look at that one slide where we identify the populations, people can fall into more than one category. So you can't just add up those several categories and come up with a number. We also don't know how well people are being served. Juneau, for example, has an excellent paratransit system, funded by the city, well supported. Other communities aren't so fortunate, and you have large populations of people who are not there. We know they're there, we just don't know precise numbers.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
And I think you just made my point. You said we have 25% needs, but we also have in that seniors who are veterans who are, so that is not an accurate number. One in four of the citizens of Alaska do not fall in the category that need this. I mean, I just can't believe that.
If I may comment back, that if you add up those numbers, it's quite higher than 25%. We discounted that total down to 25%, trying to account for just that duplicate counting that you just mentioned.
I'd like to see that.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to see that. But also, I think that we need to assess, I still think that assessing the need more specifically would be putting the horse before the cart and not the other way around. And that's, I'll end with that.
Okay, and I'm, and as I'm looking at it, I'm also looking at, I don't quite understand why some of the coordination can't be already started and going on. I mean, I know we do have some of them, but as you had all these people together, because I attended some of those meetings, and as you had all the people together, couldn't some of the coordination be starting already?
Madam Chair, coordination has been going on for more than 10 years across the state, and we have some communities that are excellent examples of coordination. My staff has been doing this and outreaching and conducting workshops, but there are still very, very many areas of the state that don't have coordination. And the other issue you have is, quite frankly, is coordination among state government, because there's nothing that says state government has to coordinate.
Sure.
When we issue a grant to Kodiak or a grant to Mat-Su of federal dollars that runs through my office, we require coordination of them. We make that a mandate of it. But all these different state agencies, and they're funding many, many different programs, don't necessarily have to participate. And so it really, again, it goes back to what I've talked about, you know, working together with your fellow agencies, trying to cajole them. But nothing in the law says that we have to do this in that way. And I can give you some horror stories, unfortunately, where an individual, a single personality, can thwart coordination.
I'm sure that's true. Senator Paskin.
Yes, and following up, I think what Representative Johnson is trying to point to, and I think we all understand that there are people with special needs, but I return back to slide number 3, and I was going to ask a question then, but I just thought I'd leave it. But it says it classifies as persons with special needs are public school students. In other words, I don't know why we would have public school students in there as a definition of special needs, and does that mean that anyone that goes to school in Alaska has special needs, and is that where we get to the 25%? And in other words, I think that's needs, we need more information as to why public school students, and then my sarcastic question is private school students aren't special needs students? No.
Do you, does anyone want to make a comment? If not,
I want to make a comment.
Senator Kukesh.
Thank you. I want to thank you for your work. I think this is a step in the right direction. We need this kind of data in the data bank, and appreciate the comments about not knowing the numbers are correct or not, but that's irregardless of what the problem is. And we could sit here and criticize the numbers all day. That's not going to get us the solution. Your work's going to get us the solution. I want to thank you for the work. I appreciate it.
Representative Wilson.
Through the chair, I've actually sat on the one in Fairbanks for 4 years, coordinated transportation, and the problem there has been number 4. I mean, for us, it's hard to coordinate everything together when we somehow don't seem to be able to get down to the needs, and we have struggled trying to figure out how to do that as a group of nonprofits, as well as wonderful help from everyone. It's been a good process. It just seems like we have never figured out how to do number 4, so we don't know how to tell everybody else how to coordinate when we don't know where the biggest needs are. And I don't know how you do that, and I think you do need more time, and I think it's great that, and I know who you're talking about, who's a big help on the transportation in Fairbanks, but I'd like to see number 4 moved up, because I know that's been a huge struggle for at least 3 years for that area.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what we're saying here, coming it from different points of view, folks, is that you've been in a real time crunch. And part of it is because you weren't appointed right away. And then it's taken a while to get the thing organized and to start doing it. And it seems to me you're just part of the way through the process now. And you may not be at the point yet where you can really have a handle on the details of the process and how you're going to do it. Not just anecdotal, but some really solid advice. And as you can hear from the members' questions, We want facts. And that's okay to be at the point where you are, but what I would recommend you do is really have a game plan on this is how much time we need, and this is a timeline on what we're going to do for the next 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 18 months, whatever, so that the governor can see and the legislature can see, if they extend your group, what they're going to do and what they can expect when, and what's going to be the outcome. Nobody expects you to prepare Rome in a day, but we'd like you to have a real solid plan, and then we can help. And I'm speaking personally, but yeah. I hope that's...
And I kind of agree with that, and what I'd like to see is tell us exactly what you need, but not only if you get this 18 months, but then the funding, it's going to be a lot. We can look at this and we can see it's going to be a lot. So it probably would, you can't start it, you can't just do it bang all at once. So, you know, what are you going to phase in first, and what are you going to, I mean, you know, so that there's a plan so that we can look at it and be able to see, okay, this is what's going to happen first, and then once they get that in place, then they'll be able to do this, and then they'll be able to do this, so that we see that you're not coming to us and just saying, we can't do this. You know, tell us what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and what the outcome is going to be. And I think that would be a little bit easier for us to understand where you're coming from.
Madam Chair and Representative Grunberg, as Task Force Chair, I think message received. I agree wholeheartedly with those sentiments.
Okay. And I come back. Keep in touch with us and let us know where you're coming from next. And that might just be redoing a little bit right now so that we have an idea so that we can go to someone and say, hey, listen, we really need to do this. Let's get with it. And we don't want them to stop in the middle of something. So please do that, and we'll see what we can do.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just, you know, I know that time is short, and I didn't know if this is your polite way of saying we're cut off, but I wanted to at least show this last slide, and it says other draft recommendations of this at the operational level have been proposed by the group and are being maintained as draft pursuant to study and public involvement. And I appreciate the feedback because we worked really hard, and 9 months we could have given birth to a baby. But this was one big baby, and it's still in the cooker. So, I don't know if we have time to just, you know, move on, or
I don't know. But you know, committee, there's about five.
That was
more
the highlight of the thing was the recommendation.
Okay, you know, some of us have got to go to our next meeting, but I think that we have to end because we've gone over 15 minutes already. Anyway, get back with us. We're not saying goodbye forever or anything like that. So get back with us, and we'll see what we can work on. Okay?
Thank you.
And the committee will meet next Tuesday, same time, same place, because we do have the committee room for next Tuesday. So we will try to get some more information from our DOT. And for no further business, we will adjourn.
Thank you.